Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. Today's Daf Yomi is Ksubeis Tzadi Dalad. We are actually on the bottom, very bottom of Tzadi Gimel and Beis, but perhaps, you know what, it might be worthwhile to go back to the Mishnah, which is 12 lines from the bottom of the Amud on Tzadi Gimel and Beis. This fellow was married to four women and he passes away. Now in this case, it so happens that he married them in a staggered manner, meaning first Rachel, then Leah, a different day, then Bilhah, etc. Rather than having married them all on the same day. So basically the first Isha's Ksuba precedes the second one. The second one predates the third one, etc., etc. So the commitment, the shibud between the husband and the first Isha precedes the second shibud. Likewise, the second to the third, and the third to the fourth. So upon his death, as in this case, Umeis, the first one goes first. So she takes what's available, and whatever's left behind goes to the second one, likewise to the third to the fourth. So again, Misha Yanasui, Dalad Noshim Umeis, he married four wives, he passes away. The first Isha, she precedes the second one. Ushnia Lishlishis, the second one gets before the third one. Ushlishis Lurvis, the third gets before the fourth. That's number one. Number two, a Shvua system is activated. Urishoina Nishba'as Lishnia. Before the first Isha can collect on her Ksuba, she will have to make a Shvua, swear to the second Isha, look, I'm entitled to this payout. So the Shvuah confirms her claim. Because the second Isha can say, look, verify your claim before you take, because once you take, I might not have anything left behind to take. And likewise, the second one will have to swear to the third one, and the third to the fourth. Ushnia Lashlishis, the second to the third. Ushlishis Lervis, and the third Isha will likewise make a Shavua to verify her claim, and she does this to the fourth Isha, but the fourth Isha gets a discount, because there's nobody behind her in line to swear to. Varevis Nifras, she collects her payment, Shaloi B'Shavua, without swearing. Ben Nanos, he disagrees. V'chim Yipnei Shehi Achroina Niskeres, just because she's last online, does that mean she has to gain and avoid a shvua? No. Af he loyti para ela b'shvua. She as well. First swears and then collects. Perhaps before we continue, let's just go to Rashi. Rashi here is about six or seven lines above our place in the Gemara. Masnisin harishana nishbaras l'shnia. So Isha number one makes a shvua. Why? What's the purpose of the shvua? Im shnia ta'enes, because his second wife, second online, she claims like this, Hoyl va'at bos lito t'chilo. Since you're coming to collect first, she's turning to Isha number one, you're getting first, Hishav ili, please swear to me, Shaloi gabis mishal bali klum, because I want to know that you haven't yet gotten paid. Duma lo mishtayer li nechosam kesheir ksuvasi, perhaps the remaining nechosam, after you collect the remaining assets, won't suffice for payment of my kesubah. That's a standard halacha when you collect from assets which are committed to somebody. You have to swear to verify your claim. So number one swears to number two. And number two, likewise, must swear to number three. Vav shlishi is tamar kein l'shnia, because number three has the same claim to number two. Urevis l'shlishi is number four, the same to number three. Avah l'revis, but number four, Nifras, Shalev Yeshua, she needs no swearing to collect. And Rashi concludes, although typically we know that when you collect from Yisoymim, from orphans, you have to swear in any case, so why would number four not have to swear? Kigan she Yisoymim Gedoylam. The orphans are already adults, because Savar Haitana, and this Tana is of the opinion that Ki Amr Rabbanan, Habalipara Menichsi Yisoymim, although the Rabbanan tell us when one collects from the assets of orphans, well, you par al bishvo, you need to swear beforehand to confirm your rights. Bi yisamim katanim amru, that refers to minors. but not adults, such as in this case. So bottom line is, according to Tanakama, the first one to collect must swear to the next one, the next one to the next one, and so on, but the last one online doesn't have to swear. Benana says no, we don't just give her an exemption, she must swear as well. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Five lines from the bottom. All this describes a case where the dating on the ksuba documents were staggered. One was on Sunday, the other one was on Monday, etc. So you have that system of hierarchy, right? Number one goes before number two because her commitment came first. But let's say hayu yaitzeis kulan b'yamecha, they were all committed to on the same day. Right? So yaitzeis means they're here in front of us, and we see they're all dated on the same day. Their commitment happened on the same time. Kol kedemes l'chaverta, afilu shu'achas zachsa. So even if they're dated on the same date, it doesn't matter even if they have the same date, but if there's a difference in hours, so this one was committed to at 10 o'clock, this one committed on 11, this one at 12. So if she's kedemes l'chaverta afilu shua achas, even if she's 1 hour ahead of her friend, zach, so she goes first. V'kach ha'yukos fin v'Yerushalayim shois, in fact, in Yerushalayim they had this minug to stipulate not only the date but the hour as well. But hayukulon yoitzes b'shua achas, if they all have the same hour as well, v'ein shem elamana, and there's only one mana to go around, cholkas b'shava, they divide it equally. There is no hierarchy or precedences because it's a simultaneous commitment to all together. They just divide what's available. So back to the Tanakama, who tells us the last one online makes no shvur, Benanos disagrees. But my kamifli, what's the point of machlekes? Amar Shmuel, who's speaking kigon shenim, says achas mehen sode she'eno sheloi. Okay, so let's say the first isha collected her sode. She collected this property, applied to her ksuba payment. Second lady did the same. Third lady did the same. It turns out that one of the fields that were collected by one of these women was never really their husband's. It was a stolen field. Nimtzis achas mehen, one of the fields turned out to be sode she'eno sheloi, something which never belonged to the husband. So now that field is going to be repossessed by its real owner. And the isha, let's say isha number one, who had that field and no longer has it, is going to have to find a backup field to collect from. Right? Now, suppose isha number four takes one of the fields, the last field available. Technically, she's called a Baal Chayv Mu'uchar. She's a more recent Baal Chayv. She was committed to last. Right? The husband committed to number one, then two, number three, number four. So she's the least entitled to collect this property. Now, isha number one no longer has a property. It was taken away from her. She's looking for a backup. She's looking for compensation. What happens then? We actually had this discussion in the beginning of the parak. Let's say we have an earlier Baal Chayv who has priority, and a later Baal Chayv who comes the second. The second fellow jumped ahead and grabbed some assets ahead of the first Baal Chayv. Shekadam v'gava. What happens then? We take it away or not? That's the point of machlekes in our mission. Tanakama sabar mashagava legava. According to Tanakama, the more recent Baal Chayv who jumped ahead and took something, well, he won't keep it. We'll take it away and give it to the first Baal Chayv. And therefore, in our case, says the Tanakama, true. Although you're not obligating isha number four, the later Baal Chayv, to make a shuwa, but no worries. At worst case, if isha number one happens to have to give up the sada, the field that she repossessed, it turns out it was a robbed field, it never belonged to the husband, and she's looking for a replacement field, she can always go to number four and take it away from her. You had no right to take it. I'm before you. And therefore, there's no need to impose a shvua on isha number four before we allow her to collect the property. What's the worst thing that could happen? She doesn't deserve it? Okay. She'll have to give it to Isha number one in any case. U'benanos savar, masha gova gova. But according to Benanos, a Baal Choyv Mu'uchar that happens to go ahead in line and grab something, once she has it, she has it. So Isha number one, who were concerned with them, perhaps her field will turn out to be the robbed field. She has to give it up. We're concerned that she should have something to back up on. Well, she won't have anything because the field which Isha number four took is going to stay with her. And that is the reason why we impose a shvua on Isha number four as well. The question was, what's the purpose? She's not really taking from anybody. She's the last online. No, she is taking. Because the rumor is out that there is a field there that didn't belong to the husband. It's going to be repossessed by its real owner, and that Isha is going to be stuck looking for a backup field. If you're going to allow Isha number four to just take without a shvua, you haven't really done justice to the earlier Baal Chayv, who's seeking compensation. Therefore, we impose a shvua on the last Isha, on woman number four, as well as the other ones. She's no different. Before you take, verify your claim. So we do this in the hopes that if she's not really deserving of that field, she'll just back off. She won't take the field. How could she not be deserving? Well, Taisa says, let's say, the husband had already given her advance payment for the ksuba. Whatever the reason might be, she might avoid the shvua and avoid taking that field, in which case it would be available. When one of the other women who lose their field will be in need of a field. And that's the point of machlekes. Pshat number two. Rav Nachman, Amar Rabba Ravu. No, the Kuli Alma, perhaps all agree. Mashagava legava. A later Baal Chayv who jumps ahead and takes ahead of time, we take it away. The concern here is that if we impose a shvua on woman number one, number two, and number three, and now number four, you know what she's thinking? Oh, I've also heard those rumors that perhaps one of the fields are really stolen. They're going to be taken away from one of the other women. And the fact that I see they're not really imposing a shvua on me, this is number four thinking. The fact that they're not obligating me to swear is somewhat of an indication that they're not expecting me to hold on to it. They're going to take it away from me soon. I better take full advantage of this property. She's going to deplete it without properly maintaining it. She's not going to want to invest into this property. She's going to deplete it, turn it to sticks and stones. That's a real concern. Because then when the other woman comes and tries to take this field, there's nothing left. So that's the shaila. Mar sovar chashinan shema tachsif, Tanakama, Benanas, who imposes a shvua, even on the revius, on the fourth one, is concerned with this eventuality. Therefore, we say, make a shvua. So either she'll just back off because she doesn't really deserve the property and she'll leave it for us, or she'll enter the property and consider it like her own and take care of it properly. Umar sabar lechashinan shema tachsiv, Tanakama is not concerned, don't worry about a shvua. Abaye Amar, he gives a third pshat in the Machlokes. What is the point of dispute? Rashi alluded to it in the Mishnah as well. The Abaye Kshisha, there was an Amora called Abaye Kshisha, the older Abaye, Ike Benayu, the halacha presented by that Amora, that exactly is the point of contention. The Tani Abaye Kshisha presented a brisa as follows. Yisoyimim she'amru, when the Chachamim impose a shvua, when one collects from the Nechasim of Yisoyimim, that general halacha, Gedoyim, it applies even to adults. Even an adult isn't necessarily familiar with his father's dealings, so even an adult, Yisoyim, deserves a shvua before you collect from him. Ve'en tzorach le'mektanim, and certainly it goes without saying if he's a minor. That's a chiddush of Abaye Kshisha. Even Yisoyimim Gedoyim can generate a shvua. Is that true or not? That's the machlokes. Tanakama less like the Abaye Kshisha. Tanakama says, well, I don't hold that. Yisoyimim Gedoyim, they don't generate a shvua. So That's why Isha number one has to make a shvua to Isha number two for a different reason, because Isha number two is saying, look, before you take, prove your case. I don't want you taking away from me. There'll be nothing left. Isha number two, saying to Isha number three. Woman number three to number four as well. But number four, who is in the back of the line, there's nobody else she's taking it away from. No shvua is necessary, despite the fact that she's taken from Yisraelim. They don't deserve a shvua. Ubenanas islay dabei kashisha. However, Benanas, who says we impose a shvua even on the last one online, after all, she's taken from Yisraelim. He was like abayi kashisha. Even Yisraelim gedolim generate a shvua. Okay, so we conclude this segment of the Gemara. When you collect, you have to swear. Why? Well, simply speaking, because you're taking from the isha behind you. What about the isha on the back of the line? Tanakam says no shvua. Benanas says yes shvua. We gave three reasons, three possible explanations for the machlokes. Here comes a new piece of Gemara. Amar Rav Huna. Hani Terei Ach, you have two brothers who inherited something. So they're now like partners. Utrei Shutfi, or you have two conventional partners. Tis Luhu Dina Bahadichat. They happen to have a Din Torah with a third party. V'oz Al-Chad Minayu. Now one of the partners confronted that third party in a Din Torah. So one of these partners went and confronted the other person in the Bezdin, in the court, Ledina, and he lost the case. The partner lost the case. So now can the other partner complain to him? Who asked you to represent me? I want to fight it myself. You never asked permission. Who gave you the right to represent me? To represent me and to lose the case after all that? The partner cannot complain to him, he can't go to the third party, the one who won a case, and tell him, well, fight it out with me now. He can't say that. At, you, lav baal dvorim didiat, you're not my litigant, you never challenged me in court. Well, my partner did with you is null and void, and as far as I'm concerned, he can't do that. Elo, rather, shlichosei avad, it is considered as though his partner represented him as well. He's representing the interests of the entire partnership. That's Rav Huna's opinion. Ikla Rav Nachman l'sura. Rav Nachman came to Sura, and he was presented with this very question. Shailuhi ki ay gavnamai. They asked him, what happens in this type of case? Omer Lui says, well, it's a Mishnah. That's how it gets into our sugya. It's a Mishnah. What's this in here? We have the four Nashim. Harishayna nishbas l'shniya. Number one swears to number two. Ushniya swears l'shlishis. Ushlishis swears to the l'ravis. But that's it. V'ilu rishona lishlishis leketani. We don't find any mention in the Mishnah of Isha number one having to swear again to Isha number three. Why? My time of why? Lav mishum shlichus avda. Because when she swore to number two was sort of representing the interests of number three as well. Apparently, that rationale is indeed correct. Here as well with the partners. Once you deal with one partner, you're a yaitse, everybody. How could you compare me, dummy? Hasam, in the case of the Mishnah, what are we asking her to do? To make a shvua. Hasam, shvua le'echad, when you swear to one person. Ushvua le'me, it's like you swore to a hundred. It's the same thing. It's the same text. It's the same shvua. What difference does it make who the shvua was directed to and who instigated the shvua? After all, she's going to say the same thing to the next isha and to the next isha. One shvua. Works for everybody. It's one size fits all. But over here, when it comes to confronting this fellow in court, you know, everybody's got their ways and means of doing things. Hacha, in our case of the partner, whose partner lost his case in court, Omar, he can claim, well, wait until I get to court. Ilu anno. Havoi. If I were there, ta'in and atvei, I would have laid a better claim against him. I would have won the case. So he has that full right. But this is only a proper claim. If he wasn't in town while this litigation was going on, so he didn't know about it. And he should have waited until I returned and gotten my permission. But if he was local and he heard about it, he should have come to the court. We expected you to show if you have an interest in involvement. Itma we learned. Beis shtoreis hayotzim b'yom echad. So Rashi explains, we discovered two sale documents on the same property written and signed on the same day. One is to Reuven, one is to Shimon, buying the same property on the same day. So what do you do? Rav Amar Cholken, you split it between these two fellows. Half to him, half to him. Ushmuel Amar Shudad Daini. According to Shmuel, the Dayan. And Taisa says it has to be a Dayan. Mumcha, an expert Dayan. He will decide who is the rightful owner of the property. Rashi explains. You know, they'll evaluate, they'll estimate, they'll try to theorize who this seller really had in mind. So according to Rav, Yachloiku, according to Shmuel, Shuda Dedain. What's the point of Machlekes? Lema, we can perhaps suggest that Rav Da'amar Rabbi Meir, Da'amar Eidei Chasima Karti. Rav will follow Rabbi Meir Shita, who says that the signatures in the shtar, that's what triggers the, typically we're speaking about a get. Karti means it cuts off, it creates, it activates the get. It's the signatures that give it power, rather than the actual delivery of the document. So just as by a get we say the chasima is what carries the day, the same with a sale document. And therefore, both documents which are dated on the same day are sort of in collision with each other. 50-50. Ushmol da'amak Rabbi Lezer. Da'amar edi mesira karsi. Shmuel follows Rabbi Lezer. Shita, which is that the Edom who testify on the actual delivery, handing over the get, or in this case, ishtar, that triggers, that activates the legality of the document. And therefore, in this case, although they're both dated on the same date, it's irrelevant. It's all a matter of when it was delivered. And since that's a fact that's as yet unknown, you can't just say yachloik. We have to try to figure this out and see, well, this fellow was closer to him. Let's assume he had him in mind and he gave it to him first. So we make that evaluation and conclude accordingly. Is that so? That Rab will follow Rabbi Meir? The chasima, the writing, the signing, is what activates the process. And therefore, they're both activated simultaneously on the same day. A simultaneous activation results in a even split, yachleiku. And according to Shmuel, it's Rabbi Lezer speaking. And therefore, it's the delivery of the shtar that activates it. And since we're not really sure who got it first, we have to use our imagination and conclude accordingly. Is that so? Lo, perhaps not. The Kuli Amak Rabbi Lezer, perhaps all shittas. Rav and Shmuel are in line with Rabbi Lezer, Rashi says, because when it comes to get, we follow Rabbi Lezer's shita. The mesira is what's important. So what's the machlekes? V'acha baka miflegi. Rav savar chaluka adifa, u'shmol savar shuda de daini adifa. In theory, all agree that whoever got it first, the delivery is what counts. However, Rav says, since we're unsure, let's just split it down the middle, 50-50. This way, you know that the rightful owner at least got 50%. Ushmol savar shuda d'daini adifa. No, shuda is better. Because then you're taking a gamble that perhaps you'll give the entire thing to its rightful owner, although it has a downside too. He might lose it entirely. That's better. It's a better chance. Asks the Gemara, Umi matzas mukmasle, the Rav Rabbi Lezer. Is that so that Rav follows Rabbi Lezer, the Edim Nesira? Is what's important. Vama Rav Yudah Marav. Rav Yudah, who was a Talmud of Rav, and then went over to learn by Shmuel, first quoted Rav that Allah Rabbi Lezer begitin. When it comes to gitin, the mesira is what activates the ishtar, but only gitin. Ki amrita kamed Shmuel. Furthermore, said Rabbi Yudah, when I went to Shmuel and I presented Rav's shita, Amar, he added af bishtaris. The handing over, the delivery, is what activates a regular shtar as well. Michlal, says the Gemara, apparently, the Rav savar b'shtaris loy, Rav disagrees by shtaris. So you cannot propose that according to Rav, we follow the Mesira even pertaining to a shtar mecher, a sale document such as in our sugya, el mechavarta. apparently the correct approach is, as we said before, Rav, who says Yachloiku, that's Kerabi Meir. The Chasima is what activates the document, since it's a simultaneous activation on both documents, 50-50. Ushmol Kerabi Lezer, Shmol follows Rabbi Lezer, the Misira is what counts. We're unsure which one went first, we have to use our imagination and give it entirely to that fellow. Now comes a kasha on Shmuel. Meisve, shnei shtoros, hayotz miyada, v'yamechot. You find, you discover two documents, both with the same exact date. Cholkin, we split it down the middle. Do you have to the Shmuel? Oh, it's a kasha on Shmuel who says, shuda de daini. Omlach Shmuel, Shmuel responds, hamani Rab Meiri, oh, this is Rab Meir speaking. V'anodamik Rab Lezer, I was going with Rab Lezer shit. Well, that can't be, says the Gemara. Either Rab Meir, if this price is following Rab Meir, that the Chasima determines, Amos Seifa, let's move on to the next halacha in the Braisa, which is inconsistent with that concept. Kosav Le'echad. So he took one document, wrote it out, signed it, on behalf of Reuven, but didn't yet give it over to him. Umasar La'achar, and took another document on the same property. And this time he gave it, he handed it, he delivered it to Shimon before he delivered the first document to Reuven. Who wins? Zesha Masalei Kana. Shimon is the winner because he received that document first. This is clearly Rabbi Lezer speaking. That is, it's a delivery that counts. V'Rab Meir, if this is Rab Meir, that wouldn't work. Amai Kana, why would the second one get the property? Ha'amar Eide Chasima Karti, according to him, the Chasima is what determines. And in this case, both documents have the same date. Why would the second one get priority? So clearly, this brisa is Rabbi Lezer speaking, and still, in the first case of this brisa, where it's unknown, we're not sure who got it first, who received it first, we say Yachleiku, that's inconsistent with Shmuel. Answer is, you're right, Tanoi. It's actually a Machlekes Tanoi. Meaning, in Rabbi Lezer, even if you hold that the Mesira is what triggers, let's say we're unsure. What do we do? 50-50, so you're at least giving the winner a 50% share. Or do you say, well, we'll make a determination and give 100% to the person who's the most likely recipient. But then you're taking a chance of perhaps making him lose totally. Oh, it's interesting in Machlokes. Which method is preferred? The Sanya we find elsewhere in another similar type of case where we're unsure as to the identity of an owner. What do we do with the money? They maintain you split it. V'kan amru, here in Babel they said, well, Masha Yirtze, Hashlish Yase. Speaking that they handed money to a third party for safekeeping, he's not sure where to return it. He decides, he makes that determination, that's like a Shuda Dedaini. There you go. We have these two methods in front of us. Some hold Yachleiku, some hold make your own determination and give it to him entirely. Likewise, in our Gemara, perhaps Rav and Shmuel are on Rabbi Lezer's track. The Mesira, the delivery, the handing over is what triggers the Shtar, that activates the legality of the Shtar. Since we're unsure who got it first, there are two ways to look at it. Do you just go fair and square 50-50, or do you go 100% to the party who you assume, who you estimate to be in the right? Continues the Gemara, Imei de Rami Bar Chama, Rami Bar Chama's mother. Look what she did. Katvesinu lenichsa, she gave away all her assets as a gift. She wrote a shtar le Rami Bar Chama to her son Rami with Safra in the morning. In the morning, she gave it to Rami Bar Chama. Leurta, that same day towards evening, Katvesinu le Mar Ukva Bar Chama. She wrote away the same property to Mar Ukva, her other son. Now we have a contradiction, a stira. Two documents on the same assets on the same day to two different people. Also, Rami Bar Chama, the Kamei Rav Sheshes. So Rami Bar Chama, the one from the morning, came to Rav Sheshes. Ukmi Benichsa. He gave him access to the properties. Also, Mar Ukva, the Kamei Rav Nachman. So Mar Ukva, who was the afternoon person, came to Rav Nachman. And likewise, he won his case. Ukmi Benichsa. Rav Nachman gave him rights. also Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes, who gave the rights to Rami Bar Chama, came to complain, L'kamed Rav Nachman. He says, why'd you do that? Why'd you give it to the second party? Amalei my time, Ovid Mar Hochi, why'd you give it to the afternoon person? So apparently Rav Sheshes was going with Rabbi Lazar Shita. So says the Rosh. The Mesira is what determines. You acquire through, you know, receiving the actual document. And he assumed, since it was written and signed in the morning on behalf of Rami Bar Chama, apparently it was given to him first. He just assumed it must have been given to him first as well. So he challenged Rav Nachman. He questioned him, why'd you give it to the second person? Omar Leh, Sir Rav Nachman likewise responds to him, Umay Taima Ovid Marachi, why'd you give it to the first person? Omar Leh Dekodmi says, very simple, because it was written first. Omar Leh, Sir Rav Nachman responds, well, I guess he didn't assume that writing means, you know, delivery as well. He says, look, Otobi Rishalayim Yasvinon, you think we're sitting in Yerushalayim, the Katvinon Shois, where they actually record the exact time and the hour on which the Shtar was written? Meaning in Yerushalayim that we have the actual hour. So the first hour had 9 o'clock a.m. We assume he wrote 9 o'clock because he was indicating that he was going to carry it out and execute it at 9 o'clock, and it was handed over at that time as well. But in this case, where we don't have the hour recorded on the shtar, just because it was written and signed in the morning, that doesn't necessarily mean it was given over in the morning. So there's no way of knowing who's entitled to the properties. So Rav Sheshes responds, Ella mar my time of adachi. So why did you opt for the second person, the afternoon person? Amalei shudah d'daini. I was applying the method called shudah d'daini. I came to the conclusion that she probably, you know, opted for the second one, and she probably had it in her mind. Amalei, so Rav Sheshes says, okay, you know what? Thank you for the idea. Ananami shudah d'daini. Likewise, what I did by giving it to the first party was an application of Shuddha Dadaini. It was my estimation. It was my assumption. Hamalei, Sir of Nachman responds, well, it's not going to work for two reasons. Chada, number one, Dadno Daina. Although I'm considered an authority, I'm qualified. I'm a Dayan appointed by the head of the Golas, Rish Galusa, and I have the ability to do Shuddha Dadaini. You need to be empowered. Need to have authority for that. I can do that. Umar, lav dina, but you don't have that authority. That's number one. Va'oy, number two, you can't just suddenly turn what you did into a shudah d'daini. You had to have that in mind to begin with, rather than giving it to him because you're thinking that he's the rightful owner. You have to apply shudah d'daini for shudah d'daini. Meikara. Because initially, lav b'toras hachi asas la. You didn't carry out that determination based on Shuddha Dadaini. Rather, you had figured that he was entitled to it legally. And that's wrong. That's a mistake. You can't suddenly, you know, shift and convert it into a Shuddha Dadaini. Interesting machlokes. Okay, Hanu Trei Shtari De'Osul Kamed Rav Yosef. So we have two documents describing the sale of the same property to two people. Okay, so both were presented to Rav Yosef. Chad havakosav b'chamisha b'nisan. In one, we see a date, 5 Nisan. Hey Nisan. V'chad havakosav b'nisan stama. The other one just had Nisan plain, without any date, specific date specified. It was sold in Nisan. So who wins? Ukmei Rav Yosef la'ahu d'chamisha b'nisan b'nechosan. So Rav Yosef gave the property to the fellow whose shtar stated, hey, Nisan. Why? Amarli, the other person complains, Vana Afsit, you mean I'm going to lose? Amarli, so Rav Yosef responds, yes. Unfortunately so. At you, Yaduchal HaTachtoina. You had a disadvantage. Why? Because the other fellow has a clear shtar stating, Day 5 of Nisan, right? But you, it just says Nisan. How do I know when in Nisan? Maybe Eima Bar Chav Tez B'Nisanat. Maybe you're a 29er of Nisan. Basically what he's saying is, the word Nisan can indicate anywhere from 1 all the way to 29, beginning to the end of the month, anywhere to that month. Perhaps your star is later than the other star. So the 5 Nisan fellow, he gets right to the property. Armalay, so he says, okay. So the fellow says, I surrender. But, V'nichtav li mar, please, my master, write for me, issue me a terfa, a document which allows me to go and find properties, repossess properties which were sold by the same seller, me'ir ve'il, starting from ear onward. At least from ear, I'm entitled. You'll never know if I was Aleph Nisan, Hey Nisan, Chavtes Nisan, fine. But even if the sale to me took place at the very last day of Nisan, at least going forward, from ear onward, I'm entitled to go find any properties that were sold after me and repossess those. They were Meshubba, they were committed to me on account of the sale that I had done sometime during Nisan, and it was a guaranteed sale. I had achrayus to it. And now I have nothing to show for it. Hamalei Rav Yosef tells him, sorry, I can't do that either. He's like bouncing him back and forth. You know why? Yachli l'mei melech, because the purchasers. Suppose somebody did purchase another property from the same seller on Lag BaOmer, sometime in Iyar, right? So you think you're entitled to collect that. But that purchaser can tell you, Yachli l'mei melech, they can tell you, No. At barchad b'nisanat. You're a one Nisan fellow, meaning maybe your star is a reference to a sale which took place on the first day of Nisan. So in reality, you should have gotten that first property, and the fellow who took possession of that property came after you, because he was a Chamisha b'Nisan fellow. His star was really the fifth day of Nisan, which followed your star. You were really first. So your complaint should be on that person, not on us. They can sort of bounce him back and forth. This fellow is losing on both sides. Right, again, we have two stories. One of them has 5 Nisan, fifth day of Nisan. The other one just says plain Nisan. So the fellow with the fifth Nisan star gets the property, because maybe your star is following that person. Maybe you're on the 29th. You're too late. At the same time, you can't go find property that was sold after the 29th and take them, because maybe your star was really a reference to the first day of Nisan. So you're really entitled to that first property which was given to the fellow with the fifth day of Nisan. So that's yours. Don't come complain to us. At barchad b'nisanat. So what's the solution? Is he going to lose everything? No. There is a solution. There's a way out. Maitakante, what's the remedy? Nichtavu harsho'a lahadadi. Like this. These two fellows, the first two purchasers, the 5 Nisan fellow with the plain Nisan fellow, all they need to do is make a harsho'a. It's like a power of attorney. It enables each one to represent the other. So let's say, one of them will tell his friend, look, you go ahead and pursue this claim against any purchasers that followed our, that happened after Nisan. And you'll be entitled to repossess that property. Either way, Mimanafshach. Either you're entitled, or even if you're not entitled, you're representing me, and I'm entitled. One of us are entitled. Right? Let's just break it down. Because, let's say, I'm the 5 Nisan fellow, and you're the plain Nisan fellow, undefined, right? I got the property. You have nothing to show. You're going to go pursue any deals that took place after Nisan. Now, if we enable each other, if I ask you to represent me, then you're good to go. Because suppose your star really follows my star, so I'm entitled to the first property, you're entitled to the next property. You can go repossess any property sold afterwards. On the other hand, if you are really in the right in terms of the property that I'm holding, your star is really meant to precede my star. You're like a one Nisan person. Your star represents the first day of Nisan. You're really entitled to property that I'm taking. Okay, so that's really yours. So then I'm entitled to collect any property sold later. The fact that we're empowering each other, I'm asking you to represent me. So either way, you're fully entitled to repossess any property sold later on. So that's the way out. Okay, let's recap today's daf. We had the Mishnah. 4 Nashim holding ksubos written at different times, so the first one can collect first, followed by the second, third, and the fourth. First makes a shvua to the second, second to the third, and third to the fourth. According to Tanakama, the fourth makes no shvua because nobody behind her she's taking from. According to Benanos, a shvua is applied here as well. We have three ways to explain it in the Gemara. Two partners. One of them goes and conducts a din Torah against a third party and loses the case. His partner can object to that loss, provided he wasn't around to know about it. But if he was in town, he's expected to be part of it. And he can't claim that he was unaware. We have two stories describing a single sale. Problem is, this is to Reuven and this Jar to Shimon. We have sort of a collision. According to Rab, Yachleku, according to Shmuel, Shudadani. We have two ways to explain the Machlekes. Number one, Rab follows Rabbi Meir Shita. The writing, the actual text in the Shtar is what determines. We have a straight out collision. We split it down the middle. According to Shmuel, we go like Rabbi Lezer. The Mesira, the handing over, the delivery of the Shtar is what determines. Since we're not sure who got it first, we use our imagination and determine accordingly. According to the second approach, both Rab and Shmuel follow Rabbi Lezer. The Mesira is what makes it happen. But then it's just a general question of how we proceed. What's the better bet? Do we just go 50-50 and give its rightful owner at least 50%? Or do we say, should the dining take a chance that perhaps we'll hit the jackpot and give him the entire field? By the story of Rami Bachama and his brother's shtaris and the whole discussion between Rav Sheshet and Rav Nachman how to proceed, and we had the story with the two shtaris written on Nissan, one of them defined, one of them undefined, and how to deal with that. Hatzlacha Rabbah and Besurais Toveis.